The Euro Golf Information Centre began the historical lecture series with a talk on Leonie Cayetani by Dr. Bendit Cowler, a talk that described the insights of this giant in Islamic scholarship in the West from over 100 years ago. I spoke to the EGIC president, Mitchell Belfer, about modern Italian-Libyan relations and how the history of imperialism and the imposition of culture should affect the way we view the two countries today. How do you think the history between Italy and Libya affects the integration of immigrants today?
Firstly, there's here in Rome, for example, and it's an organization that we've actually somehow, maybe not on purpose, but accidentally been in touch with, is the expat Libyan community of Italian Libyans who have been forced, after Gaddafi came to power, had been forced to come back and losing all their assets. And so they're actually very keen on trying to reclaim some of their assets, and they're pushing, lobbying very much against the Italian government to basically allowing any kind of accommodation with Libya or Libyans until their assets are basically returned. It's not going to happen, and it doesn't also affect the majority of, I think, Italians or Romans, in that, for that matter. But I think there's this deep history, and it's perhaps important to contextualize it that Italy requires a strong and stable Libya, and I think that they don't want to treat the symptoms of systemic problems within Libya. They'd rather try to deal with the core and the root problem so that they can kind of prevent not only state failure there, which would ultimately destabilize Italy, as we've seen over the last years with the migration flow. Because they're not all Libyans coming over, just Libya became a gateway. And it's because of that, I think there's a vested interest now, as there was historically, to try to stabilize Libya.
How do you think the respect of local culture factors into the relationship between the two countries?
I don't think it's about, necessarily, let's say, trying to respect their local culture or whatnot. Now, Italy also has to just deal with its own national interests. And in fact, Italian national interests now are the same as European national interests in general, and in the plural sense, because actually to have this unaccounted flow of migrants, or unaccountable flow of migrants, actually is destabilizing Europe. It's causing a polarization here. And I think that Italy really needs to continue on the path that it's been following, which is, not really necessarily following what the Europeans are deciding, but are really trying to encourage a dialogue amongst the stronger factors and actors within Libya, so that they're going to plug the holes. And in doing so, I think they're going to make Europe, or they're going to produce benefits for Europe as a whole in the end. So a stable Libya, whether it's done by the EU in general or whether it's just done by Italy, is going to produce benefits for everybody.
How can the West interact with the East in a mutually beneficial way?
My personal opinion in some conflicts, like the one that we see in Libya, is in pursuit of your national interests, you sometimes want to let the actors, the local actors, to sort out their affairs. I think our only real role should be in ensuring that genocides and ethnic cleansings don't take place, but that not to necessarily empower one actor over another. They have their own processes, and until they go through their process of creating a hierarchy and essentially establishing some kind of semblance of stability, we're going to end up having situations that repeat themselves where the locals have no ownership over the state. And so if you want them to have ownership, they actually have to go through the longer process of state development, and that requires less, let's say, involvement, only to go in to ensure that, when necessary, to ensure that spillover doesn't take place into Europe, but generally not to empower one or the other. Otherwise, a group is going to be disenfranchised, and you're basically going to go through the same cycle again.
Do you think elements of Western rationalism can enter Islamic societies without being rejected?
Yeah, definitely. I think that in general, Libyans, even under the Gaddafi regime, maybe especially under the Gaddafi regime, were very educated. And it's through education that people recognize what individual interests are. And I think that there's no, deep mystery to Western individualism as a reflection of individual interests. you know, the interests of pursuing, I don't know, the career path you want to, choosing the partners that you want to, developing yourself economically, you know, in an environment which is relatively, you know, free and without kind of pressure from above or pressure from below. And I think that not just in Libya, across the Arab world, we're experiencing right now a recalibration, in fact, of values that are related to individual interests. And the abandonment in some ways of the larger collective, the pan-Arabism or the pan-Islamism. And finally, you're starting to get national interests that are the collective reflection of individual interests, shareholder societies.
Doesn't this shift to nationalism imply that it isn't just the West that's responsible for acid washing these local cultures?
I don't think so. I think that there are, I mean, the talk that we had was especially focused, for instance, on issues of territoriality. And I don't think we're really referring to territoriality in this way, but rather in like a kind of spiritual reawakening. So I think it actually, there are universal, maybe I should say this properly, but I think there are some universal truths. That doesn't matter if you're from Arabia or Europe, you're going to share, you know, freedoms to choose your beliefs, freedoms to choose the direction of your life. And that doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, territorial. And I think that the talk that we had about kind of the territorialism of Europe versus the Middle East is one side, and it's something that's a larger debate. But I think in terms of individuals, and the concepts of individualism is still very much important across the board.
Do you think it would help to view migrants as following the individual will, as opposed to just being a part of a mass movement from east to west?
Well, individual, like the preservation of individual life is certainly the most important thing. But the migrant crisis today is not only about that, it's also about, of course, you know, there, let's put it like this, there's universal, how can you say it, like a universal values or ethic, but on the other hand, there's also kind of realities that people have to face, and not everybody will have the same access, not everybody has the same capabilities, and that's also true. So they may aim or, you know, aim for the same, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be able to reach that objective. And it's the same, I mean, it's a terrible tragedy. You have not only you know, 2 million, 3 million, you have 60 million people that would gladly come over to Europe for work, come over to Europe to participate in a European society, come over to Europe because, you know, life expectancy is higher, it's safer, there's no war, you know. So it's not just the few million in North Africa, we're talking about, you know, in the whole Middle East, Africa, North Africa, and into sub-Saharan Africa as well. There are just 60 million people in estimation that would come over, and I think not all of them would be able to, because of course you'll have to measure one set of interests versus the other. And just because Africans want to come to Europe doesn't mean that Europeans necessarily feel that they could integrate all Africans or others. You know, there's no way to integrate 60 million people.
If there is this divide between the East and the West, and 60 million people want to come into Europe, has an Eastern model of society been shown to fall short?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I don't believe in an East-West.
I don't either, that's why I asked him.
No, but for me, the concepts of East-West are just, you know, Occident-Orient, it's all manufactured. But I think the real question, I mean, and if you look at the big picture, Europeans were also, they were migrants themselves, not just accepted migrants. You know, Central Europeans during the communist times went to West Europe, West Europeans during Nazi times fled to North Africa and to the Americas. And, you know, I think it's important that we don't have these kind of East-West distinctions. And not only the talk from today, but also, I think the talk from today is a much better understanding of the cultural ties between, you know, North and a South Mediterranean, but surely they're also not necessarily reflective of East and West as most people would like to see it, because there's something very particular to the Mediterranean world versus, for instance, East Asia or the Indo-Pakistani frontiers or Afghanistan. And it's important to, you know, kind of contextualize each one of the chapters that we're looking at. And this way, that's why I liked actually about the discussion, is that you didn't really compartmentalize the topics. You did compartmentalize. You didn't give the broad strokes of, you know, in this somehow this mystical Islamic world, the West, the East, and this mythical Western world, you know, Europe. It's important. It's refreshing.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.